So, today is something or other, the 25th, April 25th, and, so let me, I had a Pat Nevin's Lock, here it is out of town today, but he wrote me a long email, and so I want to begin by discussing. I want to see, because I always find our discussions and votes and that sort of thing so illuminating I want to do the same thing here. It gives me some personal insight when I hear what other people think about all of this. What I've tried to do over the last two or three weeks is to present, basically to present the evidence regarding jihad. And of course, 2 weeks ago, or maybe even three, I can't remember when we started on this, but I provided you with the closest thing I could come to an exhaustive rundown of all of the passages in the Quran having to do with violence, warfare, treating of captives, you know, basically struggle in the very broad sense. And then Marty reasonably raised the question 2 weeks ago, well, how about the actual word jihad? And indeed, I was looking at the topic rather than the word. And so I then spent part of the following week doing a bunch of research, and I presented the fruits of that research last week, where I went over the 41, and there are 41, according to several things I found, 41 instances of the word jihad or its variants in the Quran. So, I mean, so after looking at all the passages I could find, I mean, as I say, as complete an inventory as I could come up with on the idea of struggle and warfare and, you know, in the very broad sense. Then last week I focused on the word itself and its 41 instances. What I came up with is pretty close to what I had read in some couple of articles. So of the 41 instances, let me just kind of recap. Of the 41 instances, one had to do with struggling in toil, like, you know, tilling the land and that sort of thing. So that's remember, jihad, the word, the basic meaning is just struggle. But like all words, it's used in a fairly broad array of contexts. So one instance of the 41 had to do with struggling to toil. Okay, I could see that. That's not relevant to what we're interested in. Five instances had to do with, and I came up with this phrase, I think I was very proud of it, because we talked about it last time, strenuous oaths. I came up with that modifier, strenuous, which I think gets across the idea, because Tom raised the question. I forget exactly what the question was, but I remember having you replying, well, he's talking about forceful, you know, swearing forcefully. So strenuous kind of is similar to struggle. So it's these strenuous oaths where one is, you know, saying, swearing about something and making a real point of it. Anyway, that's not relevant either to our concerns. So that takes up five more. And then two others had to do with struggling to convince somebody of heresy. Well, obviously that's not our focus either. So altogether, those three of there are five uses according to one of the things I read, which I think is a good way of parsing it. Five uses. Well, three of the five are not germane to what we're interested in: the strenuous oaths, the struggling to convert to heresy, and then the struggling and to toil. So that's those we can take and put aside. That's eight. So that brings it down to 33. So there are 33 instances of the word jihad in the Quran that we need to look at. And so I revised my, you probably noticed, maybe some of you noticed this, I revised my grouping just a little bit because I went back and looked at those 33 again. And then I sent out an email last Sunday or last Monday or something like that, where I said, okay, here's my criterion, or actually my criteria for the grouping. I'm going to group in one under one heading, the verses the passages that satisfy two criteria. Number one, they have to be Medinan. In other words, they have to be late, because we kind of know that Muhammad was not particularly worried about military things before he fled to Medina. I mean, his situation, of course, was worsening, getting worse by the year in his native Mecca. But open warfare did not break out until he fled to Medina, in which case you had the Meccans and the Medinans fighting it out in these battles going back and forth, and eventually Mecca was captured, etc. So he doesn't, I mean, if you think of the very, if you think of, and I think this is very true, by the way, and this is why you should read, if you're going to read the Quran, you should try to read it in chronological order. I've been using the Egyptian chronology, which is just the sort of the standard, you know, traditional one. But really reading it chronologically makes it much more, I think, obvious. Of course, you could, I guess this could be a circular argument in a sense, but at any rate, much more obvious that so much of what he's writing and even projecting onto other people like Noah or Abraham or you know, Moses or whatever, so much of what he's writing are things that he encountered himself, you know, when he puts into the mouth of, say, Abraham's father, Terah, you know, well, we have always been worshiping many gods, you know, why should we change now? Well, you know good and well, those were arguments that he himself heard when he was preaching monotheism, right? So, I mean, you read the Quran in its chronological sequence, what you see are sort of autobiographical events that sometimes or very often are actually foisted onto various other people that he's talking about, other prophets, usually, that he's talking about. So, I mean, you can see how the ideas in the Quran are deriving from his own experience. That's what I'm saying. Then you come to the Medinan surahs. And all of a sudden, what's happening? Well, warfare is what's happening, right? So, of course, you see all this stuff about fighting and that's it. Yes. Is somebody going to say something? Okay, I thought I heard something. So, yeah, of course, then, that's what you read. It's reflective of the new situation, the situation of constant struggle and now armed conflict dealing with his opponents. Well, anyway, so that was my point was the first criterion for classifying it under, you know, I mean, I had, what did I call it? Striving in religion versus striving in war. That's what I called it in my notes, right? So the first criterion for classifying something under striving in war was that it would be Medinan and not Meccan, right? And then the second criterion was that it be in a military context. So when I looked at the surrounding verses, if it was all about fighting and that sort of thing, I would classify it then as struggling in war. So go in, back and look at that email. It's close to the way I read it in class, but I did shift a few things back and forth using those two criteria. I don't know what other criteria to use to try to figure out whether jihad means struggling in religion and trying to be a better Muslim versus struggling in war. Other than those two criteria, I think those two criteria are reasonable. And when I did it that way, I was only one off from the whoever, and I didn't buy the book, so I'm not sure, you know, what the person's arguments are. I don't know whether I got it exactly the same ones that this person did, but I was only one off from the summary that I read of this person's book. Where this person was making that exact fivefold classification, but I think he had like 12 under struggling in war, and I had 13 or something. I forget exactly how it all tallied out, but at any rate, I think that's a reasonable way of doing it. So it is hard to determine if you exclude the three uses of jihad that we really don't care about of the 33 that are left. It's really kind of hard to determine whether it means, you know, struggling in religion or struggling in war. Anyway, given that, I want you to give me your impressions. But I'll kick things off by reading from Pat's email, because I got this big long email, and so see if you agree with his ideas. You may or may not. But anyway, here's what he says. Hi, Don. I'll be out of town tomorrow. Well, I won't read you that paragraph. I'm sorry I won't be there for the pre-vote discussion. But absent that, my vote would be that jihad is struggle, and struggle can mean different things in different contexts. So I'm not sure I'd vote for any of the five options. Although, when I read his thing, it sounds to me like he is actually thinking of these five options. He may not be phrasing it that way, but... you'll see what he says. Let me just keep on reading. But rather, the jihad is the struggle to be a believer and to remain faithful in the cause of Allah. Well, heck, that's option number kind of like option number two. I could generalize it. I said inner struggle against temptation, but in general, religion. Well, you know, that was the jihad is religion is struggling. For in the cause of religion, let's see now, where was I? But I'd rather jihad struggle to be a believer and to remain faithful to the cause of Allah. So that could encompass struggle against temptation, striving to adhere to the practices and beliefs of Islam, and struggle against the foes of Islam. Whether the latter struggle encompasses converting the world to Islam or conquering the world under Islam, that's 4 and 5. Or just defending Islam against attacks, that's more like 3, right? Islamic just war theory. Because just war theory would always say wars are justified if they're defensive in nature. So that would be 3. I don't know. In practice, it's easy to cross those lines and not just for Islam. One of the verses that resonates with me is 279, which says you should strive for Allah with the striving due to him, and you should pray, pay alms, and hold fast to Allah. Nothing particularly about fighting, though it could be implied if Allah urges it. Lots of verses about striving in the cause of Allah, which could be either religious or warlike, which of course is exactly the problem. That's the 33 that, you know, I tried to use those two criteria to distinguish between the two. Finally, 862, if they incline to peace, incline thou also to it. That seems to argue against either options 4 and 5. That's it. That's what he had to say. So I am open to further discussion. Yes, Tom. Yes?
You want me to go first?
Well, you had your hand up, didn't you? I thought you had your hand
up. No, I was just holding it.
Oh. Go ahead.
Well, I will comment before I hand over is the one that's number two is the only one that is personal.
Uh-huh.
You know, about yourself, sort of like the faith versus works
act
for Christianity.
Yeah.
So if you were like the faith, you know, salvation by faith alone in Christianity, two is the closest on the list for Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not what I would vote for, but I think that's what Pat was commenting on, that if it's between you and Allah, number two is the answer.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I mean, this is the way I originally phrased it because, well, Marty, remember, I haven't heard this from Marty either. I've heard this in many, many contexts, but Marty cited the translator's introduction to her version of the Quran, which I think, you can correct me, Marty, if I'm wrong, but I think was pretty much phrased in this way. I don't know. I mean, I could. That's an ethical, you know. Well, actually, isn't this more like works? Well, maybe not. It's inner. I don't know. It's an ethical thing.
Well, it's not perfect. That's the closest one to the salvation by faith.
Got it.
Yes, we know that part of being, you know, part of it said Allah says you must do some works.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should. Maybe we
so
should.
Maybe that's we why should. Two is the closest.
Well, maybe we should broaden this because it's, you know, it's just the way I phrase it, it's just ethical. If I just said to be a better Muslim, then that would encompass struggling against temptation, but it would also encompass struggling against unbelief.
To me, the key point is not your fellow Muslims.
So let me do this.
All four of the other ones involve other people.
Yeah. Right. That's a good point. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to strike through this. I'm going to leave it up here but put a line through it.
Oh, changing the test.
Yeah. to be...
You told us that wouldn't be on the exam.
Yeah, well. Oh, well. A good Hobbesian professor would say you can do anything you want to do. I've been teaching Hobbes in the other class. Okay, so instead of it against temptation, then suppose I put up to be a better, and then under inner, I will adopt Tom's word and in parentheses personal, because it's a personal kind of thing. Okay, so then that makes it broader, and it may be a little more in keeping with the first point that Pat made in his email. Because I didn't necessarily mean to, you know, think of it all that narrowly. It's just that the phrasing I have encountered and the phrasing I believe in Marty's introduction was an ethical kind of thing. But so
the impression, where did I get the idea that Islam means submission? And that's kind of what I think the guy in my was dealing with, that you have to completely submit yourself to God.
Yeah.
As a lot of the things that you read before we got to talking about jihad, we're talking about that.
Yes, yes.
And it's, you know, you should always be thinking about God. You should, you know, five times a day, you get down on a prayer rug. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I told you guys this story, but, you know, I walk around my neighborhood, and one time I saw a mail truck, and the guy got out, and I thought he was looking for something in the grass, on the little thing between the sidewalk and the street, there's a strip of grass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I got closer, he was putting down a prayer rug, and he was gonna pray.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, in the middle of one of those offshoots of Sonoma Road in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got to do that five times a day. Yeah. Not to mention do all the other stuff that you're supposed to, alms and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously the guy in my version was trying to get away from jihad as being violent and get, you know, you've got to submit to God and do everything he says. And as your things, all the things you read, and God sees what you do.
Well, I think that my rephrasing maybe captures that better, submitting to Allah.
I think it does.
Yeah, to be a better Muslim, to submit to Allah. I'll even put that in parentheses. Oops. Well, if I could spell, that would be really great. Okay, very good. Other comments, other observations? Well, does anyone
know?
Yes.
When we were reading through all the different things. The what kept popping into my mind was the books of Joshua, Judges, Kings and Chronicles, mm-hmm. dealing with the wars Jewish people were in. Although in Joshua, describing some of them as war, maybe being kind to what the Israelites were doing.
Yeah.
And so I feel that there's a, just because it's in the religious text, the text of the religion, the main scriptures, if we're going to concentrate on those particular little, those pieces and go, you know, see, it's this way, then that can be done to Christianity. That can be done to Judaism just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I haven't like decided which way I would vote or not, but that kept being in the back of my head
mm-hmm.
that looking at another religion in this way and seeing those elements kind of forces me to like see them in my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've noticed many times is that, you know, it's a little easier, you know, to be objective when you're obviously when you're looking at somebody else's religion. But then all of a sudden, as you just said, you think, wait a minute, then that'll sort of kind of reflects back and I can sort of then see my own religion a little more objectively, perhaps. And that Pat sort of alluded to the same idea, too, I think, because he did say, just as you said, Reuben, that, you know, well, these things are not unique to Islam. Other thoughts? Jay, do you have any thoughts?
I was inclined more to four or five. Maybe in the beginning, they felt an obligation to bring everyone under Islam or to conquer the world. I've read things like there are two regions in the world, the Darul Islam, the region of Islam, and the Darul Harb, the region of war. Seems to incline me to one or the other. Maybe to convert the world isn't as much on the agenda anymore. Maybe they realize they can't, but if they had a chance, maybe they try to extend the Darul Islam somehow.
That distinction between four and five was one I made a couple of weeks ago, which is in the early centuries where they conquered the land, you know, conquered, like saying go all the way to Spain.
Right.
But it wasn't essential to convert everybody to Islam. They conquered. That's why I proposed five as an extension to an alternative to four.
Right.
In fact, Don, my vote would be five followed by two if I had to rank them.
Oh yeah, we'll have we'll have to have ranked choice voting here. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So five would be, since you're not getting much traction here, five would be my vote for the first one.
How can I do this? How can I do ranked choice voting here?
Well, you're not going to get any more votes. Yeah.
I tell you what, I'll do.
If everybody abstains, you don't have much.
Well, I'm going to make everybody vote. So. Yeah.
Or violence will follow.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I need to go that far down. I don't know. I tell you what, I will. I know what I'll do.
But you might be happy if you just get first votes.
I'm happy. I can give four a half a vote for you. How's that?
No, my first choice was five, followed by number two.
Oh, okay. Two half a vote. How would that be?
Whatever.
Okay.
You're the boss.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of it. Okay. This is going to be one, and this is two, one half. Okay. Bob, what do you think?
Wait a minute. Now are you hearing me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was hearing you before.
Yeah, I was inclined toward number five. It's difficult to separate the obligation, because why do you have that obligation? It's because you have dealt with your inner struggles.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if you think that part of being a good Muslim is five or something like that, then yes, there's an overlap there. Yeah. So which one would you vote for?
Oh, I would start with five.
Okay. Do you have a second choice, or is that it?
Well, since you're giving halves... No, I guess I'm kind of. I guess I'm sort of agreeing with you. But you can't. You need number two to get to number five.
Okay, that makes a one. That makes a one for two. Then your half plus Tom's half. Okay. And Jay, which one did you say you were going to vote for?
Five.
Just five and five alone. No halves or anything. Right? Is that true?
No. No, I could see going halfway with number two as well.
All right.
What did I do? Lead the witness?
Yeah. So you've corrupted everybody, Tom. So who's next? Who wants to... Bill, how about you? Okay, go ahead.
This is where I'm at. I'm five.
Okay, you're a fiver. Okay. That's five and five alone, right?
Yeah, I see the argument for two, but I'm just more five.
Okay, you're a fiver. Okay, who's next?
I have to go with five. I think, and since the days of Muhammad, it may have devolved a bit, but the way it was, the Quran was written, five is it. I think.
Okay. All right. Five there. Who's next? Let's see, who else is on? Jamie and Gladys. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Gladys votes for two and five.
Equally or unequally?
What, Gladys, equally or how?
Yes, equally.
She says equally.
Okay, I'll give... Okay.
Uh-oh. That breaks this algorithm.
That's okay. How about you, Jamie? Do you have ideas?
Well, I'm leaning more toward the five.
Okay, who's next? We got Erica, Pat, I guess Karen, Marty, John. I don't know about Patty. She can't talk because she didn't have a mic. So I'll have to find out later. Oh, Ruben also.
I haven't voted yet. My vote is two first, four second, and then I view five as the means to accomplish four.
Uh-oh. Now I gotta go into third.
You think you ranked, so.
How's that? Just, you know. You said two, four, and five, right?
Two, then four, then
yeah.
Five.
Okay. Erica, and I don't know about Patty, Marty, and if there's John is there, Pat, and if Karen is there, or left.
Yeah, John's not here, but I think I would vote for... what they would call a just war, and I think that's how the extremists get around to it. They feel that our culture, our whole culture, is attacking their religion. My impression. So I think I would maybe vote for that one. Well, I've got equal ones. Two and three. Probably equal.
Okay. Good. Very good. Who's next?
Hi, all. This is Erica. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. I'm going to pass on voting. I'm distracted. I've got a friend on Facebook having a serious mental health crisis,
oh, all
so
right.
I'm kind of coping with that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, Pat. I'll go next.
Yeah.
And Don, I was remembering back to your Islamic philosophy class,
mm-hmm.
so years ago. So, being the student who wants to make the A in the class, and remembering back to your earlier years ago lessons, but you kept talking about how things swung back and forth in Islam and in sort of views between these, and that makes me really think about 2 and 4. Is how I'd split my vote.
Equally?
Yes, equally.
Okay. 2 and 4. And that is everybody, I think, except for Pat. So let me go back to his email. So
Don,
it's...
Don, get a vote.
Go ahead.
You get a vote yourself?
Yeah, I guess I have to, don't I? first, let me just look over. So since I've revised 2, I'm not sure if, but rather that jihad is the struggle to be a believer and remain faithful to the cause of Allah, to be a better Muslim, submit to Allah, and so forth. So definitely that's a vote for that one. Let's see now. And struggle with whether the latter struggle encompasses converting the world or conquering the world or just defending us, I don't know. Practice it, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on, 279 says you should strive for Allah with striving due to him, which is 2 again. Nothing particular about fighting, blah, blah, blah. Lots of verses about striving the cause of Allah. If they incline to peace, that would argue against 4 and 5. That would be a just war thing. You know, if they incline to peace, incline thou also to it. That's a just war. So what I'm going to do is for Pat, I'm going to give him a vote for 2. And maybe a half a vote to 3. That sounds maybe kind of like what he's saying, perhaps.
I think that's right, Don.
Okay, let's do that. So he gets a vote here. Let's see how many. Like that, and then half a vote over here, which makes this a complete vote. So this is not very well lined up. Oh, no. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I just, what was it? 1.5 over here?
Okay. Yes, that was 1.5. Okay. Yeah, you erased the wrong one.
Okay, yeah. So we have 2 here. All right, so then I have to vote 2. So nobody, we've got 1.5 for 4, 7.5 for 5, 2 for 3, 6.5 for 2, 0 for 1. Okay, that's interesting. I would have to, I would be inclined, I think, since now it's permissible to give 2 votes. because, remember, I divided up of the 33 remaining, you know, references to jihad. I divided into 2 categories, struggling in religion and struggling in war. and given all the fighting verses that we had read before and the struggling in war, given that that falls in that one of my criteria, was if it's in a context of fighting and so forth, I would give 1 vote to 2, and then I would give a vote to 4, I think, is what I would do. Right? Yeah, because I think 4, I don't think it's just a matter of, in the Quran at least, I don't think it's just a matter of military conquest. I think Muhammad is out to convince everybody that he's right, which implies, you know, becoming a Muslim. That's the whole problem with these polytheists down there in Mecca, that they still believe in multiple gods and that sort of thing. And darn it, they got to shape up and have the right beliefs. How many times does he talk about belief? You know, it's all over the place, right? Woe to those who disbelieve, you know, eternal hellfire and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I would say 4 over 5. So anyway, So if we tally up the votes.
Well, Don, I think the counter argument of 5 versus 4 was when they actually did conquer back in the early centuries.
Right.
They didn't force everyone to convert.
Of course, but that's,
not the same as what the mission was.
Yeah, that's pragmatic.
Reality.
Yeah, exactly. Reality has a way of tempering enthusiasm, doesn't it? But at any rate, we're talking about the Quran. We're not talking about, you know, the early Muslim period or anything like that. We're saying if Islam is what's in here, then this is what it should be like. And so what is the Quran advocating? And I think it's advocating converting the world to Islam. That's the way I take it anyway. So anyway, if we tally all the votes then, this gets 0, and this one gets 7.5. This one gets 2, this one gets 2.5, and this one gets 7.5. So we are tied. So, yeah. So we have split evenly the inner struggle to be a better Muslim and conquering the world under the banner of Islam. So, I guess that's our conclusion.
Did Pat get his A?
Oh, I'll give everybody A's. You know, I think about this a lot. I have a bad habit of brooding on the past. Just ask my... Oh, I should ask Patty. That's right, I should run upstairs and ask her what her vote is. Because... And maybe she could give me a... Maybe she could text me. So, Patty, if you have your phone,
God,
text me. That may break the tie.
What? What's
that again?
You can have a playoff next week when some more people return.
Yeah, where's Bonnie? We need Bonnie. She always has important things to say.
You can give Pat a chance to change. Write down what Pat's vote was and give him a chance to change it.
Yeah, I could do that. Well, it's part of our recording.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Anyway, I was about to say, though, I have a bad habit of brooding on the past. And you know, as a teacher, now the nice thing about Ollie, where I've been teaching for the last 2 or 3 years now, and I have not taught at Marymount. Matter of fact, I was sent an email about a month ago saying they now are considering me as retired. I thought that was funny. Well, anyway, but I still have my email. So, but anyway, Ollie has no tests, as we have no tests here. But you know, just looking back, the only unpleasant memories I have teaching college has to do with grading. Always has to do with grading. And I think about, you know, some of the poor grades people got and how they were so upset. And I think, well, maybe I should have been more lenient, blah, blah, blah. You know, so anyway, that's neither here nor there. But that has to do with the struggles, the jihad, having to do with grading when you're teaching. You do have to evaluate people. Oh, well, anyway. But everybody gets an A here, so we're all happy. Okay, what I want to do... I only have about 10 minutes right now. But what I want to do for the remaining, well, this is our last meeting for April, and I guess we have 5 Sundays in May, maybe something like that, I think. And I think that we should go through May and then June. Well, the first Sunday in June is when Jenny has her big shindig, so I think maybe that's a good time to stop. Is you know, the last Sunday, our last class will be the last Sunday in May. So anyway, what I want to do for the remainder of the 5 weeks or whatever it is reprise a little bit of what Pat was alluding to, and that is some of the theology that later proliferated, trying to interpret all the stuff that we've been reading, because of course. The problems confronting the Islamic theologians were not all that different from the problems confronting Christian or Jewish theologians in interpreting, you know, their various holy books. So, so it's instructive, I think, to look at some of the theological controversies in the medieval period, is what we're talking about. You know, trying to make sense of all the stuff that we've been learning. And So, in keeping with what Pat alluded to, I'm going to begin with the... we have two main groups in the Middle Ages. We have the Metazoites, and I never can remember where the... you know, exactly how to... In fact, oh, here it is. Moved, yeah. And the Asherites, and honestly, there's a aleph or a hyene in here somewhere. Maybe here. I wouldn't vouch for that spelling, but we have those two main groups in the Middle Ages, and just like in Christianity, one group is more inclined to a liberal interpretation of the Quran, and the other one is much more inclined to a literalist interpretation of the Quran. And when you're talking about literalist, I mean super literalist. I mean probably more literalist than most Christian literalists are. Anyway, the earliest group, or the earlier of the two groups, were the Metazoites. The very first, you know, I guess you'd say the very first theologians in the Islamic world are the liberals, oddly enough, not the literalists. And but when I say liberals, maybe that's a little bit misleading, because it turns out, I don't necessarily mean they were tolerant. I mean, the word liberal in English kind of has many connotations. And if we talk about liberal Protestantism, for example, we think of a sort of a wishy-washy, kind of like BUMC, sort of a wishy-washy theology that just about anything is okay as long as you come to church. As well as a tendency, you know, what amazed me, what was it, last Sunday? Basically, was it last Sunday when the text was Doubting Thomas? I think it may have been last Sunday. Well, anyway, what amazed me was I came away after the sermon, having heard that doubt is more than okay. Whereas if you read the story of Doubting Thomas and John, it's not okay at all. So A can mean not A, I guess, in the Methodist Church. But anyway, so I mean, you know, so not only are there tendencies in liberal Protestantism to interpret the Bible, say, allegorically, to use, you know, or non-literally, but also when we use the word liberal, I think we also mean, you know, tolerant of other, or more, you know, very open to other religions and that sort of thing. I'm just cautioning you, because it turns out that the Metazoites were liberal in the former sense, but not in the latter. They actually used the arm of the state to persecute non-Metazoites. So they were rationalists, and they tended to use a sort of a allegorical approach to the Quran. But at the same time, they were intolerant of other, especially conservative interpretations of the Quran. So isn't that interesting? I mean, it's from our perspective, maybe it's a little bit of a strange bedfellow type thing, but logically, there's no reason why a liberal can't be as intolerant as a conservative, right? And two independent issues there. Well, anyway, so in this book, which is this is actually a more general book, Defenders of Reason in Islam, but it has the treatise of if I could find it of Al-Jabbar in here. I gotta find it. Oh, here it is. No, it isn't either. Where is it? Here it is. Al-Jabbar Da, and this is the title. The title of this is The Book of the Five Fundamentals. Al-Jabbar, let's see. Al-Jabbar died in 1024. He's a 10th and 11th century theologian. And so he wrote, and this is, a representative example of a metazoite treatise. And the title of this is, as I said, The Book of the Five Fundamentals. So here what he wants to do is lay out kind of like a, almost like a creed type thing. Here's what you have to believe in. There are actually five things that you have to believe in if you're going to be a good Muslim. And so at the very beginning of the book, these are the five fundamentals, as he sees it. He says, there are five fundamentals of religion. Okay? Unicity, that is to say, the oneness of God. Not surprising, right? That's a big deal, of course, in the Quran. Justice, that is to say, that God is just. The promise and the reward and the threat, that has to do with eschatology, salvation and damnation, the promise of salvation, the threat of damnation. The intermediate position, this has to do with grave sinners in Islam and their intermediate between people who are not grave sinners and unbelievers. So that's what that is referring to. And commanding the good and prohibiting evil, which of course would be the ethical side of Islam. So these are the five fundamentals, and the book is simply going over each of the five fundamentals. And it's divided into, there are six chapters altogether, and each one of them devoted to one of the fundamentals. Now, one of the things you will notice as we go through here is how rationalistic Al-Jabbar is. I mean, basically what he's doing is giving philosophical arguments that just so happen to support what he thinks the Quran is saying. Now, of course, sometimes you have to, as I say, interpret it a little bit liberally, allegorically, whatever. But at any rate, the interesting thing is, he's not saying, okay, this is what the Quran says, and therefore this is the theological principle. It's rather, as any reasonable person can see, this is true, and, oh, by the way, that's also what the Quran is saying. See what I mean? So it's kind of a different starting point when you look at this treatise. So let's look at some examples. So actually under the divine unicity is really several different claims, but it's all kind of grouped together. So the very first, what do you want to call a section? It's almost like a paragraph, let's say, the very first paragraph under divine unicity. They're all, by the way, all of them are, the style is almost like, kind of like Aquinas in some ways. They all begin, if one asks X, then say Y. That's the way it's always set up. So basically the question that somebody's asking, and this is what you should always say in response. So it's almost like a handbook, maybe, for a metazoite. Okay, I got this question. Okay, let me look up in the five fundamentals and see how I need to answer, that kind of thing. So, in paragraph 16, then if it is asked, what is the proof that you yourself and all bodies are contingent? Say to him, because they always have motion, rest, separateness, and contiguity relative to one another, and all of these are necessarily transitory, so bodies must similarly be contingent. Then if it is asked, what is the proof that bodies are produced? Say to him, because writing, constructing, and craft are activities that require a maker, from whence it follows that they are contingent. So it is necessary for them to have a producer, for everything contingent must have a producer and maker. You know where this is going, of course. The universe is contingent, and therefore the universe had to have had a maker, and that would be God. Because the very next paragraph is, then if it is asked, what is the proof that he has the power to act? Say to him, because an act in the visible world can only be the act of one who has the power to act autonomously, and acting is valid on God's part. So it must be said that he has the power to act. Okay, fine, that seems to be okay when you look at the Quran. Then if it is asked, what is the proof that God is omniscient? Say to him, because skillful acts, you see how this is just building, we've already established that God acts. Well, God acts skillfully too, because God produced the universe. Because skillful acts such as writing and crafts can only be done by one who knows how. And since it is true for God in creating human beings to exceed the wondrous crafts, therefore he must be omniscient. Then if it is asked, what is the proof that he is living? Say to him, indeed, everyone who is powerful and knowing must be living. Right. So then if it is asked, what is the proof that he is hearing and seeing and perceiving of perceptibles? Say to him, because he is living, so building on the previous paragraph, he's a living being with no deficiencies, and deficiencies are impossible for him. And each one who has these attributes must be, and each one of these who has these attributes must be hearing and seeing and perceiving of perceptibles, the same as we grasp things with our intellects in the visible world. So, you know, because God is living and has all the, and is in the, any living thing is going to somehow interact with the world, so God has to be able to do that. Then if it is asked, what is the proof that he's existent? Because he is omnipotent. And it would not be possible for a non-existent being to act, and because his being non-existent could not be related to a possible non-existent entity, therefore he must be existent. If not, it would open up the way to much ignorance. So we've established God's existence on the basis of God's creative power. And we established that on the basis of the contingency of the world. And because the world is, you know, any contingent being had to have started somehow. Okay, well, the universe is contingent. So therefore, it follows from that, that the universe had to have had a start, had to have, something had to have, something had to have brought it into being that could only, and something intelligent and living had to have brought it into being that would, of course, then be God. And therefore, God must exist because this contingent universe, which does exist, and is contingent, you know, must have had a creator, and that would be God. So notice how we're proceeding here. We're proceeding on a purely rationalistic basis, right? We're not looking at the Quran first and saying, here's what it is, and here's the theological principle being enunciated there that we have to sort of generalize maybe or clarify or what have you. But rather, we as philosophers almost can deduce that, you know, that there must have been a creator of the world because the world is contingent, therefore created, and that would be God. So therefore, God must exist. And, oh, let's look at the Quran. Oh, yeah, there it is. See, the Quran's absolutely right. We have proven rationally that God must exist, and that just happens to agree with what's in the Quran. This would be a good place to stop. Does anybody have any final questions or comments? We'll pick up with, you know, go on with this next time. We'll look more at the unicity of God and then go on to the other fundamentals having to do with the problem of evil and that sort of stuff. Anything?
Well, thank you, Don.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, see you, Don. Have a good week.
Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.